The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download The Fan app.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to WadeFord.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory certified used car outlet at WadeFord.com. Wade Ford, we are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
Chuck and Chernoff. Chuck and Chernoff.
Pleased to meet you.
3 o'clock on the dot, you know what that means.
It's time for Matt Lanno and the King. Chuck and Chernoff. Chuck and Chernoff, it's the Fan.
Driving home Atlanta is a traffic jam, but we got Chuck and Chernoff on the Fan.
Chuck and Chernoff. Chuck and Chernoff, it's the Fan.
All righty then, we get her going in our 3 o'clock hour. It is Chuck and Chernoff on the radio on FM at 93.7. AM another day at 680, and of course, worldwide on our 680 The Fan mobile app. This hour of the show presented by This Stuff Matters, helping you make the most out of what matters most. Like and subscribe to This Stuff Matters, the podcast, at thisstuffmatters.net. Why don't we start the 3 o'clock hour by saying hello to Charles.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Chuck.
You know what I did for the first time ever this weekend?
Tell me.
I let the dogs out.
Then what?
What's up, dog?
After you did that, was there anything else? Did you let them back in? It was just it, huh? Dogs went out. What up, dog? Good to see you. Chuck, good news. It is officially Braves opening week as we lead up to Thursday when the Braves will open in Philadelphia against the Phillies at 3:05. Now, Braves opening week can only mean one thing. Jesse Chavez is back. Anytime Jesse is let go because he has a 5.17 ERA somewhere else and the White Sox, they did release him at the end of spring training, the Braves have added him back to the roster on a minor league deal, so they have 29 players in camp with the ageless Jesse Chavez trying to work his way back to the big league club.
Part of it is the White Sox know they're going to be bad, and they're kind of okay with that, so they would rather be young and experimental and find out about somebody bad rather than Jesse, who could probably, you know, chug to about 65 innings and give you some competent relieving. Well, here it's different. He can pitch the sixth or the fifth and the sixth and be groovy with it. It's fine. And he wears that red hat sometimes. So
I hope it works again at some point. I mean, there's an expiration date.
He's pitched his tail off here.
Here. He goes anywhere else.
He was it the Angels that?
Yeah.
The Braves traded him to the Angels. The Angels let him pitch. They were like, God, you're awful. We release you. And the Braves like, we'll take you back. Came back here, started pitching well.
He's awful. The Cubs, he was awful. The Angels, he was awful. He puts a Braves uniform on. It's like Clark Kent puts his Superman costume on. But again, there's a chance he's pitching for the Savannah Bananas by midsummer. Like, there is that.
He's a champion. Good for him. And he's got a full pension.
Braves are finishing up their spring training run. In Northport, a 4-0 lead over the Twins right now. In the eighth inning, the good news to report, Chris Sale made his final tune-up start of the spring. He went 3 innings, gave up 3 hits, no runs, struck out 6, and he was pumping 96. It was fun to see.
That's what he do.
Tyler Matzek, Joe Jimenez, Raisel Iglesias, all scoreless innings. They combined for four Ks in their three innings.
Big deal there again, Joe Jimenez. I mentioned this before. He had moments like windows where he was pretty good last year, but it was uneven. They had big ideas for him. I'm telling you, that is a guy. There's an opportunity for the Braves to have a big season from somebody out there that maybe we're not even thinking about is Joe Jimenez.
Marcell Ozuna and Austin Riley left the building today. Again, as we work our way till Thursday, when the Braves will send Spencer Strider to the bump against Zach Wheeler for the opening day start. Now, Spencer finished up his spring. I don't typically at all ever mention numbers to you guys in the spring, but Spencer made his final start the other day against the Rays of the Grapefruit League season. And his first 3 2/3 innings were scoreless, which ran his scoreless inning streak in the spring to 22 innings. He had one more out to get, and he finally gave up a couple of runs. So he finishes the spring allowing 2 runs in 22 and a third innings pitched. He led all of baseball with 34 strikeouts and 8 walks. Again, it's meaningless, but he's got to feel like he's in a good spot heading into the opener on Thursday.
The word he used was sloppy. Said I was sloppy.
You know, a little hard on himself anytime he gives up anything. So that should always be taken with a grain of salt. First pitch Thursday, 3:05. Ford leadoff show, 2 o'clock. 6:80 game day, 1:25, 1:30-ish. All depending on the mood of Domino and Chiellini. Domino will be all a part of the pregame festivities. Chiellini is trying to leave when Domino leaves. So we'll figure all that out, on Thursday. Now, if you want to, if you're one of these people of means, like Chuck, and you can hop a bird to Philadelphia, right? You don't care. It's the day of. Let me go see what the next flight out is. You can be in Philly for the opener on Thursday. Get in prices this morning on the Game Time app. We're $163 with fees all in. Pricing all in, $163 will get you a seat. If you want to just stay home and wait for the Braves home opener against Arizona April 5th, all in pricing on the Game Time app will get you in for $73. But Chuck, good news.
Oh, what's that good news?
$20 off with your first purchase.
If
the code THEFAN, that's THEFAN, the fan, $20 off your first purchase there with the Game Time app.
So if your life extends beyond mansions and Benzes,
right,
you do save the $20 there.
I wouldn't mind saving $20 on some tickies. It's not a bad deal. You can go to the Game Time app, download it, and save that $20 with the code THEFAN, THEFAN. Not a fun weekend for Kirby Smart in Georgia. He doesn't want his cell phone going off at 6 a.m. with news of one of his players, in this case, the Florida transfer, Trevor Etienne, who was arrested, released at 5:27 a.m. Sunday morning, charged with DUI, reckless driving, affixing materials that reduce visibility of windows and windshields.
What is that, like a local motion sticker?
I was trying to think. I thought he had one of those sunglasses, windshield covers for the sun. I don't know.
Like an air freshener hanging down.
No. Failure to maintain lane and proper driving on the road. So there's been this talk of what is DUI less safe, if that's indeed what it was. If you're under 21 and you have alcohol on your breath, you don't have to blow .08 to get the DUI, is my understanding of this. We'll have Bruce Hagan with us on Wednesday to give us some more intel, but he's underage. They had reason to believe he was drinking. I'm assuming he took the breathalyzer, and there's the bottom line. He posted $1,883 bond, according to Athens Clark County Records. He was released at that point. Kirby will meet the media tomorrow for the spring practice press conference, so we'll see what he addresses right there. Then we found out news that Georgia lost one of their top-notch recruits, 5-star defensive lineman Justice Terry, who in some services was the number one DL in the country.
Yeah, at least for now. It's a commitment from a high school kid.
Yeah, he flips over to USC. Apparently, Aaron Donald was a part of that crew out in L.A. that was really putting the full-court press on him. So he flips over there.
Okay, well, Aaron Donald went to Pitt, and he just retired from the Rams.
I know. Listen, don't know why you're getting all up in arms.
Uncle Aaron's going to hang out in, Southern Cal with you.
So the other one is there was another, I think he's a Warner Robins kid, who ended up was on Georgia's list, too, ends up committing to USC as well. So not a great weekend, but guess what Kirby will do next week? He'll flip somebody else's 5-star.
If you care, they got a commitment from a 4-star quarterback.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yep. The thought is that kid may elevate to the number one quarterback in the class, I think, in 2 years.
Georgia, again, they will flip somebody else's. It'll be a different name.
Absolutely.
It'll be just fine. The Sweet 16 is set, and if you like chalk, you'll like this field of 16. Favorites over the weekend went 15-1, and they're 36-12 overall in the NCAA tournament. We only have one double-digit seed left in the field. All the ones are left. All the two seeds are left. That's only the fifth time that has ever happened heading into the Sweet 16. Add to it two number threes, two number fours, and two number fives. So it is not the madness. It has not been outside of the Oakland upset of Kentucky. There just haven't been a ton of moments in this tournament where you go, oh, Bryce Drew, oh, big time buzzer beaters, all these great. No. It just hasn't happened yet.
Auburn ate it on, I guess, Friday.
Against Yale.
That happened. And what else did we have? We had an overtime for Houston.
Yeah.
But as far as, I mean, it's very little. I mean, North Carolina beat the hell out of somebody, or two somebodies. UConn looked like a machine so far.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's all chalk.
Speaking of Yale.
Except for Auburn.
Sorry.
Hell.
After Auburn was upset by Yale on Friday, Yale's social media accounts became very popular, including the account Yale MB&B, which they wrote, our notifications are blowing up with basketball tweets, but we're actually the Yale Molecular Biophysics and Biochemistry account. You might want to tag it Yale Basketball instead. They had to make it clear to people that we are not the basketball account.
It's funny that you're tweeting Yale, most elite, intelligent folks, and they're having to explain Twitter to you.
Correct. Just so you know.
We can't even communicate on Twitter level correctly with people at Yale.
We have four ACC teams left, UNC, Duke, NC State, Clemson. Two SEC programs still on the field, yeah, Bama and Tennessee.
Not a good start to the tournament.
So Thursday night, you'll get Clemson, Arizona, UConn, San Diego State, Bama, North Carolina, and Illinois, Iowa State. And then Friday night, you'll get NC State, Marquette, Gonzaga, Purdue, Duke, Houston, and Creighton, Tennessee. This has so far been the most watched first round and rounds in NCAA tournament history. Now, we do juice up the numbers by making it more available on every stream, every platform, four different networks. For some reason, I was going down a YouTube rabbit hole yesterday, and I was watching a few minutes of the 1990 NCAA tournament. Jim Nance was in studio during one game, and he's like, let's take you to the end of Louisville Ball State, because you couldn't see the end of that game because you were watching the end of, like, Texas and whatever they were playing. And you had to stay with that one channel to get you an update. It was all regionalized.
You would watch CBS. That was the channel. And it would be, you have, like, a Texas-Illinois State first-round game. And so midway through the second half, they would go, all right, we're going to take you out now to Baton Rouge in the Southeast Regional, Georgia Tech and East Tennessee State.
So Nance previewed Sunday's action. He's like, the whole nation will get St. John's Duke at noon from the Omni. Then there were three games at 2:15. Three games at 4:30, and only in Arizona and parts of Alabama did they get to see the Crimson Tide and the Wildcats. How weird that they were like, we don't have another channel to make this stuff all available, so it'll all still be local or regional.
Yeah, each of the games was having it televised by CBS folks somewhere, and if I want to say, didn't Santa Clara beat Arizona as a 15-2?
Yep, Steve Nash.
And believe me, it was midway through the second quarter, and all of a sudden Jim Nance said, all right, we're going to go out to wherever the hell this thing was, Huntsman in Salt Lake City.
Let's go to the pit in Albuquerque.
And I'm watching Santa Clara beat Arizona. I'm like, all right, you had to wait for the whip around. There was no alternate channeler.
It did feel like a gift, though. I'm going to get bonus coverage. They're going to show
me
something.
It made you watch.
I'm not supposed to see Arkansas and Lee Mayberry right now because I'm watching Georgia Tech and LSU.
Cullen's looking at us like we're reading from stone tablets.
I know. It's pretty funny.
Like little animals.
Point is, Cullen Madden, producer Cullen, you're spoiled, all of you, that you get to see all this stuff
on your phone as it happens.
Yeah. And as a, by the way, Georgia beat Wake Forest yesterday at the Steg to advance to the not-so-elite eight of the NIT. They'll face Ohio State and Columbus. With the winner getting a trip where, Chuck?
Where would that be?
Well, the Final Four of the NIT, which is?
Oh, is that MSG still?
Nope, I thought so too.
Oh.
Apparently it's in Indianapolis.
Indiana?
That's right.
When did that happen?
I don't know. I saw it today. I was
is that a COVID thing maybe?
I don't know what it was. When did they move the NIT? The only redeeming...
There's a chance in 2020 the NIT was like, you know, it's a chance. Nobody else is playing.
The maybe only redeeming thing about the NIT was, oh, you get a trip to Madison Square Garden in New York.
Yes.
Now you're going to whatever the old Caseco Fieldhouse is in Indiana.
Indiana? I'm trying to think. Was it a Chris Bosh Georgia Tech team? Did they play in the NIT?
They lost in the first round to, like, Minnesota or something.
Yeah, okay.
Good times. Memories of Chris Bosh.
And then Josh Pastner took him to the title game against TCU, maybe.
Is that true? That's a thing
that could happened? Have happened. Georgia Tech, yeah, that's... Yeah, thank you.
I saw him doing coverage the other day on TV. Either CBS
very
or ESPN.
Upbeat and positive.
Yeah, Josh Pastner getting his TV time.
Get ready for Chuck and Chernoff's Worst Idea.
We'll take your worst idea answers today at the Harrah's Cherokee Casino's Twitter feed. Since it is Braves opening week, we're going to have a lot of Braves-themed ideas throughout the next 3 days. I want you to name for me a 90s Braves player who never made an all-star team. Braves player never, but he just comes to mind as a Braves player. Loved him, just never made an all-star team. Can I give you two?
Oh, please.
Brian Hunter.
Was he Brian L. Hunter?
No.
Or that was the Astro?
That was the twin in the Astro. He was a speed guy. This was Brian Hunter who platooned with Sid Bream, the right-handed
That's
part of it.
Right.
And I'll throw in, for some reason, Michael Tucker. Always looked better than he was. That guy looked like a player.
Did he freaking blast a playoff home run?
Off Kevin Brown to send a series. I want to say,
holy smokes,
I think it was the 98 LCS. Braves got down 3-0 in the series.
Might have been the best pitcher in baseball.
So the Padres are trying to close it out in game 5 in San Diego, and he gives up a bomb to Tucker to send it back here. Spoiler alert, the Braves lost in game 6 at Turner Field.
Sterling Hitchcock thing. All right, well, I got to honestly respect, mad props, Frankie Cabrera.
Okay.
Like, it all happened. It started there. And then I would say Tony Tarasco. He was a
five-tool
player. It's absolutely what it was.
One of the early sports talk radio arguments when we were in our infancy in this town was Tarasco or Klesko. Who do we keep? Tarasco, Klesko, Klesko, Tarasco. That was, I'm not kidding. That's a thing that happened. Brian Gephardt, 90s Brave, who didn't make the playoffs. Didn't make the All-Star team.
Michael Tucker was the first one that came to mind, but I'm going to go with Charlie O'Brien.
Love it.
Yeah.
Number 11.
Mm-hmm.
He is the picture of a platoon catcher, Charlie O'Brien.
Yeah.
Now, this is going to show, Cullen, how old are you, Cullen Mann?
27.
So you were born in not 1991.
Correct.
Okay. So give me a 90s Brave you heard your parents talk about.
I'm going to go with Rafael Belliard.
There you go, little Rafi.
You pronounced it right. Good for you.
Yeah, Brian.
That out. Yeah,
he was on the front page of the AJC when he hit a home run.
True story.
I think he hit one or two in his entire career. Hit one in New York, so they put him on the front page of the paper.
Domino swears that after a tough night, and reporters would walk up, Rafael Belliard, no hablo, says, after a good night, great English.
Smart. Heady play. It's well done.
Always had the app.
Yep. You guys will send your answers for your 90s Brave player who never made an all-star team to the Harrah's Cherokee Casino's Twitter feed. Tom Glavine made several all-star teams.
Tommy!
He will join us in 15 minutes to talk about his first time. All the greats remember their first time. We'll ask Tommy G about his coming up. But coming up next, this should be an easy choice for the Falcons.
Either horse or slush. I'm not good at that.
Talking out of the side of your mouth so we still understand you?
Yeah.
No, that's not the choice. This should be an easy choice for the Falcons. At least it should be based on their recent history. We'll tell you about it next. Chuck and Chernoff on the FAN. Thanks for making us a part of your Monday. With you till 6, 680 Rewind. Giving you the best of the 680 The Fan broadcasting day. Maybe you missed it on the locker room 6 to 10. Or you hopped out for a second and missed some of the Buck Ballou show 10 to 11. Or Cellini and Domino 11 to 2. You'll get a chance to hear some of that coming up at 6 o'clock. Local radio at its finest, 6 to 7. This hour of the show is presented by This Stuff Matters, helping you make the most out of what matters most. Like and subscribe to This Stuff Matters, the podcast, at thisstuffmatters.net. The Hall of Famer,
Tom
Glavine, joins us in 5 minutes. As I said, we'll ask him about his first time. Bet he's never had to answer that question on the radio. We'll do that coming up as we are in Braves opening week. We look forward to Thursday. Remember to have your 680 The Fan mobile app ready so you can tap thy app on all things Braves action throughout the year, but specifically the opener, day games. You're going to be in the office. You want to have the app. Also, looking ahead to Wednesday, I mentioned Kirby Smart speaks to the media tomorrow. Kirby will be with Nick and Chris, Domino and Cellini show. 11 to 2, they'll be live in Athens. So Kirby with Domino and Cellini coming up on Wednesday. Make an appointment for all of that fun. Before we talk to Tommy, Chuck, I think this should be an easy choice. But with the Falcons, it's never that easy and it's never that obvious. That we are 1 month away from the draft today. And if you start to believe the tea leaves on what's going to happen in the draft, it sounds like we're going to have potentially four quarterbacks go in the top five or six, which is a dream come true for a team now like the Falcons who don't want to take a quarterback.
Dream come true for J.J. McCarthy and his agent.
Yeah, him too. If Joe Alt, the tackle from Notre Dame is off the board, too. That's an extra little dream.
Can I ask you, does not those two desires, don't they have to be linked? Like, if we value quarterback so much, don't we also have to value the best pass protector in the draft as well?
You do. It just depends who's taking them.
Somebody has to.
So here's the deal, though. It could be a situation where the top pass rusher in the draft is just sitting there for you. I won't say falls to you because that's the wrong term. It's just sitting there. And that might be, in the Falcons' mind, Jared Verse. That might be Latu. That might be Dallas Turner. Any of those choices could be there, which seems like easy. This team needs pass rush, and they've needed it forever and ever. Go take it. Run the pickup. Let's move on. And it's easy. But it's not always that easy. Honesty compels me to remind you all that rookie pass rushers make very little impact most of the time. There's an occasion where a rookie does pop, Micah Parsons. Typically, though, it's hit or miss and a lot more miss than hit when it comes to the pass rush. That doesn't mean you don't take them. In fact, I am 100% endorsing them taking the best pass rusher on their board at the top of their first-round grades. That being said, there is a world where one of these ridiculously talented wide receivers is staring at them in the face, and they say, looking around the war room, we can be overwhelming offensively. We can just be overwhelming. We have our quarterback now. We have Drake, and we have Kyle, and we have Bijan, and we supplemented it with Darnell Mooney and Rondale Moore. Let's go get one more weapon. Let's score 30-plus a game and be overwhelming. Doesn't that sound enticing and alluring? It does, until you realize the Falcons have done that before. The 2012 Falcon offense was pretty overwhelming. When you have Roddy and Julio and Tony and Michael Turner and Jacquizz Rodgers and a few Harry Douglas, that was an overwhelming offense. You know what that overwhelming offense did? It built an overwhelming 17-0 lead in the NFC title game, except the defense couldn't hold it and they lost.
And like you mentioned, Harry Douglas, Julio broke his foot that year. Harry Douglas?
No, not 12. He didn't break his foot.
No, I'm saying like 2 years later,
14. Right?
He broke his foot that year, right? That he broke his foot, Harry Douglas was good enough to step in and be a 1,000-yard receiver. But previously, he'd been on the team. He's like, I can't get reps.
I think was our buddy Finn still on the 12? It doesn't matter. 2016, that was an overwhelming offense. 2016 was Julio, Sanu, Freeman, Coleman, Hooper. Like, the list went, that was an overwhelming.
By the way, there were like, you mentioned the two running backs and the tight end there. They were all like third or fourth round picks. Those are good picks for those two positions. And so,
but you know the problem?
You would invest it beyond just the stars. You'd invest just the good picks too.
But the problem was, even with a 25-point lead, your defense couldn't figure out a way to hold on to a lead that should have been insurmountable. The reason I bring both those situations up, there is a world where Malik Nabers, I don't think he's there, but Malik Nabers is there for you, or Roma Dunze. I don't think he's there either. But there's a world where they are, and you're like, let's just go overwhelm people with Kirk, and we're going to score 34 a game, and it sounds enticing until you get into a playoff game and you realize we can't hold what should be an insurmountable lead. Don't overthink this if you're the Falcons. If it's Turner at the top of your board, if it's Latu, if it's Verse, run the pickup. And I would even tell you, in the second round, double up and go get another edge. Make your first two picks edge rushers.
So Chop Robinson or whomever fits that in the second round if you have to.
I'd love it.
So you're saying four quarterbacks and Marvin, that's five picks. Joe Alt has to be there. I agree, that's six. I'm not saying in that order. I'm saying those have to be six of the picks. If we value quarterbacks, we also value left tackles. If it is Malik Nabers, well, suddenly all of the pass rushers are there. If it's one of the pass rushers, two of the pass rushers are there. Maybe the guy you like the most anyway, and Malik Nabers.
I mean, again, it's going to be
a great spot. Normally, the elite players are gone. Like, the game wreckers are gone at eight, and it doesn't appear to be the case this year.
So, again, the wide receiver is going to be sexy, and it's going to be enticing. I want the Falcons to have the mindset of January 22nd. Playing in a second-round playoff game, because that's the goal. Now, we lead the game 24-10. How do you get off the field? How do you hold the lead? The 2012 Falcons did enough with a 17-0 lead that they should have been able to go to the Super Bowl. They couldn't hold it. The 2016 Falcons did more than enough building the 25-point lead. They couldn't hold it. Go get pass rushers. Hell, if you told me in the first four picks they get three edges or two edges and a D-tackle, I'm fine with it. Figure the bleeping thing out at some point. Now is the time.
He's a Hall of Famer, an Atlanta legend, and again this season, he's only on one station.
And there it is, career strikeout number 1,000.
Struck him out. Seven strikeouts through five.
And that's 300 wins for Tom Glavine.
It's the Tom Glavine Show, presented by attorney Ken Nugent. One call, that's all.
the Hall of Famer, back with us. We're very excited to have him back for 2024. He's Tom Glavine, who joins Chuck and Chernoff on The Fan. Tommy, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're very excited to welcome back the Hall of Famer and the new season. So it's not often on the radio I ask anybody about their first time, but I will in this case with you. When you found out you were getting your first opening day assignment, albeit in a different era, butterflies, nerves, excitement, what did you feel, and try to put yourself in Spencer Strider's situation, who will do the same on Thursday?
You know, I think for me at that stage of the game, it was certainly excitement, anticipation, and a little bit of surprise. You know, I don't know that it was something I anticipated, but, you know, nonetheless, I got it, and it was the kind of thing that I think, you know, it's one of those things that you, when you're going through it for the first time, it's kind of like, okay, well, who would have ever thought I'd be an opening day starter for a team? So that was pretty cool. And I think Spencer probably is in a little better place than I was. And I don't think this will be his last. But for me at that time, I wasn't sure I was going to get another one.
So I remember asking you about this time last year. I was like, I'm going to way overspeak here. I was like, there's some elements of Doc Gooden here. And you were like, yeah, that's probably okay to say that. And I was like, holy hell. And if you remember, everybody knows the heater with Doc, but it was the curveball that would just buckle people. Talk about Spencer adding the curveball. That's just a wicked combination for a guy who can hit 99 easy.
Yeah, and I think that when you, you know, when you look at Spencer or looked at Spencer last year, you know, I think a lot of people looked at him and thought, man, if he could add another pitch, it would really complement that fastball slider. You know, look, the fastball-slider combination is devastating, obviously, when it's on. But I think it's one of those things where, you know, when everything is hard, so to speak, on your off days, I think it makes it a little bit easier for the hitter to track that, you know. And I think that now being able to add another secondary pitch, a breaking ball that obviously has a different break but is a built-in change of speeds, I think that makes it extremely hard for a pitcher, you know, similar to me and with my fastball changeup use, right? You have that top end on your fastball. You have that bottom end on your softest off-speed pitch. And the greater that is, the harder it is for a hitter to cover that range. So I think that's the case with Spencer, right? When they're worrying about 95 to 100 on the fastball and 92, 93 on the breaking ball, not a lot of separation velocity-wise, but now all of a sudden, if you mix in that breaking ball, and that breaking ball is in the high 80s, and it's a change in direction in terms of the break, that's a big range for a hitter to have to cover. And again, I think it adds to, I know it did for me once I developed my changeup. You know, when you have that secondary pitch that you can rely on, it makes your good days obviously really good. I mean, like you're dominant, but it makes those days where you're off a little bit better to manage because you're not so locked into what your options are. You have more options, and I think you have a better chance of surviving on the days when you don't have your good stuff.
The Hall of Famer Tom Glavine with Chuck and Chernoff on The Fan. So we know pitchers are warriors. That goes without saying. But in this case, the Warriors and Spencer and other pitchers are going to have to go from pitching in 75, 80-degree weather for the last 6 weeks to Thursday. It's supposed to be crummy, some rain, mid-50s, maybe even dipping down to the 40s. How much is that an adjustment on his body or a pitcher's body?
Well, I'll remind pitchers something that it probably took me a little bit to realize, and it's kind of one of those things I wish I knew now what I didn't know then. Or however that saying goes.
Oh, you got it. You nailed it.
You know, I can promise you, as difficult as it is for a pitcher in cold weather, hitters do not want to hit in cold weather. They don't want to hit. And you know, if you hit, you get one fastball in on a guy's hands and rattle that bat, or get a breaking ball off the end of the bat and rattle that bat, those guys don't want to get back in there. So, you know, I think even more so for these guys that are velocity guys, you know, hitters don't want to hit that in cold weather or mishit it, I should say. So, you know, I would say whatever adjustment it is for pitchers, and it is because you don't have nearly as good a feel on the baseball when your hands are cold. But I can promise you the hitters like it even less than we do, so take advantage of it.
All right, there are images we have in our mind, and sometimes we're way off. Turns out I was kind of right on this one. I had this idea in my mind that about once a start Charlie is going to hit somebody on the foot with a slider. And I was like, no, that's not right. I went and looked. He's led the league the last nine seasons. He's led the league in hit batsmen four times. He's finished second twice. What's going on there? What is it, and it's fine. I love watching him pitch. The ball looks like a damn frisbee sometimes. But what's going on with the hits batsman, like literally that pitch?
You know, I think for him, again, one of those guys who, you know, that breaking ball is you know, I don't want to say it's a max effort pitch, but it's a there's a lot of effort in that pitch. I mean, he throws that pitch hard. He's looking for a ton of spin. And I think for him, when he gets into situations where, you know, maybe he's ahead in the count and he's trying to bury that back foot slider, those are the ones that he holds on to too long. You know, I know, again, not the same, but somewhat the same. You know, for me, if I had two strikes on a guy and I was trying to get a chase changeup to a righty, well, obviously I'm not going to hit him, but that's the one I'm more prone to throw in the dirt, right? Because you're trying to get it to finish in a certain spot. Now, I think the same is true for Charlie on that pitch. He's trying to get it to finish in a certain spot. I'm sure he's envisioning that pitch finishing somewhere between the back of home plate and the hitter's foot. But if he holds on a little bit too long or spins it a little bit too hard, you know, the margin for error is not great, right? So that I think that's what happens. He tries to bury it a little bit too hard sometimes. So whether he throws it too hard or spins it too hard, you know, in any event, it's that one that he's, you know, holding on to for a touch longer and ends up hitting the hitter in the foot. But, you know, you're right. He does it a lot, but when he's on, man, it's sure fun to watch.
Back foot slider, Charlie. When you were in your final couple of starts of spring, so I saw where Max went six innings in his and Spencer went five and a third or five and two thirds. How long did you want to go? And I'll use the term max effort, and I know that's probably not going to apply to everybody, but how much were you treating it like a regular season start so when you did apply it to what happens at the end of this week, it felt pretty normal?
I would say your last couple starts are kind of season-type starts. You know, it's like I've always said, I don't know, you know, I don't know what guys are doing nowadays. I'm assuming they're getting six or seven spring training starts somewhere in there, five or six, somewhere in that range. So, you know, I know, again, for me, I've said it a lot. You know, the first couple times you go out, you're just trying to get comfortable. You're trying to find home plate. You're trying to establish your fastball command. You're bringing along your breaking pitch. You know, you don't really worry about sequencing pitches all that much. You're just trying to get a feel. You don't even think about the running game. That's the last thing on your mind. So, you know, I think as time goes on, all those elements start to come into play more and more. And I think by the time you're out there, you know, your last couple of starts, I think they're pretty close to game time. You know, you're trying to, you know, obviously, unless you're playing a team like in the Braves case, if they're playing in the National League East team that they're going to face five times during the course of the year, then, you know, if you've got a little wrinkle that you're adding, you may not show that to the hitters. You might hold on to that. So other than that, I think you're starting to treat those last couple of starts like it's a regular season start in the sense that now you're really starting to get the mental process of the game going. You're starting to think about sequencing. You're starting to think about how you're setting hitters up. You're starting to obviously worry about the running game and pay attention to all those things. And then I think your last start, it's all of the above. You just know you're going to back it down in terms of volume of pitches. So, you know, whether it's 80 pitches or 75 pitches or whatever you did, you know, I think you tried to treat those 80 pitches like, okay, this is a real game. Let me go out here and you know, kind of think through this thing like I'm going to my first start of the year, just knowing it's going to be less volume.
You were mentioning everything is based off velocity now. That's where it all starts. I was raised watching baseball. This guy, Randy Jones, won a Cy Young with the Padres in the 70s. His sinker was about 71 or 72, and he'd just throw it all night. Charlie, again, or a major, it's not unusual, a sinker being thrown at 94, 95. Are there different speeds, like, that variable for the sinker as a for instance now? Because, like, you were talking last year, Hunter Green throws a 101-mile-an-hour slider. So, like, everything's a velocity pitch now.
I think for some guys there are. You know, I think for the most part, you get a guy, you know, who's a high-velocity four-seam guy. If he throws a two-seamer as well, he's not going to have as high a velocity. It's not to say he doesn't have the same effort level, but, you know, with less seams, you get less spin, so you get less velocity, and I know that was the case for me. You know, when I threw, my sinker was 86 to 88. When I wanted to throw a four-seamer in on a righty and I knew I was going to let it go, I could throw it 90, 92, somewhere in there. But you know, that wasn't where I pitched. I think for the guys that do have two fastballs, like I said, fastball or four-seamer and sinker or two-seamer, yeah, there's a built-in velocity change there. And that's how I tried to use my four-seamer and my two-seamer. You know, it was a natural built-in change in velocity just by changing my grip. So to me, in essence, it was two pitches that I had. You know, I don't know how many guys do that. Not a lot of guys that do that in today's game. I think most guys are predominantly four-seam guys. You know, some of your veteran guys will be four and two, but you know, it's to me, it's like, I feel like if you can throw a four-seamer, you ought to be able to throw a two-seamer. And it's just, like I said, a natural built-in change of speeds. But, you know, I think that's where for a lot of guys who are that velocity fastball guy, that velocity slider guy, if they don't have that one pitch that they can throw that takes a little bit of velocity off of a pitch, you know, I think those guys are a little bit easier to track and a little bit easier to follow. And that's why I think that curveball for Spencer is going to be such a great addition.
Glav, last thing for you. As we all assume this will be Max Fried's final year in Atlanta, nothing's written in stone, but that's the way it feels. How much pressure is on him, A, to stay healthy, but B, to perform like he did before the last couple of years when he ran into some injuries, knowing he's heading to the open market? Because I'm sure you had that heading into your walk year, knowing those things were coming.
Look, it's, you know, everybody's situation is different, right? And I think that I'm not speaking for Max. I can speak for myself. You know, going into a contract year when you know free agency is pending, I think for me, you know, I had always assumed I was going to be in Atlanta. Didn't work out. But, you know, you still have that uncertainty looming over your head, right? And I think for Max, you know, that's certainly going to be the case, right? And I think for him, you know, he's obviously going to want to stay healthy. I think that's the biggest thing he has to prove. But, you also want to have a good year. So, you know, there's pressure in all of that. And it's not to say that, oh, he wants to have a good year because he's going to be a free agent and he didn't want to have a good year last year. Of course you do. You go out every year and you want to have a good year. I mean, that's, you know, that's the essence of putting on a uniform. You want to go out there and be the best you can be and be the best in the game and do all of those things. But I think in a contract year, all of those things are still there, but they're magnified. But, you know, my advice to Max would be, control what you can control. You know, when you go out there every fifth day, that's what you control. You don't control anything outside of that or beyond that. Just go out there and pitch when it's your turn to pitch and do the best you can and just roll with it. See what happens.
Glav, we would be remiss if we didn't wish you a happy 39th birthday.
Yep. I'm trying to forget my birthdays nowadays, but thank you. Mm-hmm. Yep.
What are we now? You're trying to forget it. This is a bad reporter on my part. The follow-up boy. What will we do? Does the wife take you out? Do the kids call? Like, what happens on the birthday?
It's been a pretty, you know, I just had lunch with the wife and now I've got a, you know, a little middle school baseball game. I got to go coach and I'm going to come home. She's going to make me dinner. So it's going to be a good day.
It's what they call low key birthday fun.
That's right. That's right.
Well, happy birthday, Glav. We're so glad to have you back for another season and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right. You guys have a great week.
There's the Hall of Famer and the birthday boy, Tom Glavin, with Chuck and Chernoff.
He's at the age. It's just the one candle now.
Yeah, no question. You don't even put the five and the eight. Oops. I wasn't supposed to say his age.
Just that one
screwed up. All right, coming up, you know front office Los. You're familiar with him. We're going to find out how big Los's board really is. Plus, what does he see the Falcons doing at 8 on that big board of his? We'll find out next. Here we go. Chuck and Chernoff are on the radio. I'm Matt Chernoff. That's Chuck Oliver. You see Chuck and Chernoff. Chuck, say hi.
Hey, I'm Chuck. He's Chernoff. Chuck and Chernoff in the afternoons.
That's his voice. My voice is this voice. I'm Matt, you see, so we don't confuse people. Make sure we're very clear with who is who. With you until 6, 680 Rewind follows our program, giving you all the best parts of the 680 broadcasting day. Great news. The inaugural Braves Golf Classic is coming to the Atlanta Athletic Club at the championship course May 6th. It all benefits the Atlanta Braves Foundation. The four-person scramble format will feature an on-course contest, prizes for the winning teams, unique gifts for every golfer. You'll enjoy breakfast, lunch, and a post-round award ceremony, plus food, cocktails, and you'll see some of your favorite Braves legends along the way. Foursomes and sponsorship packages are available now. To purchase your sponsor package or foursome, please email bravesfoundation@braves.com today.
Ooh, naughty numbers.
He's
the man that knows the cap, bonuses, and all of that. He's the one that gets you cut. Front office, so don't give a word. He's the guy who knows the law. Can't put him against a wall. He's the guy with all the answers. Matt and Chuck are backup dancers. Front office, no tools at all.
All brought to you by Entry Point Doors and Windows. You know, you've been getting those letters from the HOA. Time to replace the windows in your home. Maybe you're dealing with wood rot. Maybe you're dealing with an energy issue. Entry Point Doors and Windows can handle projects like that. They've been doing it for over 20 years. Remake your windows, remake your doorway, remake whatever you want when it comes to the look of your home. EntryPointAtlanta.com. Sign up for the free estimate. Matt, it's finally done. The top 50 draft board is done. The stuff will be out in a couple of days. The editing is finished. I just got to do a quick little cover story, and we are all set to get excited about this upcoming NFL draft.
I love the Lowe's Big Board. Yes, this will be a part of our build-up to the NFL draft coming up next month. Now, on everyone's big board, Caleb Williams is number one, the USC quarterback. But, Lowe's, I find it interesting to see just small differences in 2, 3, 4, 5 on different boards. And your number two player is different than maybe most that I've seen on most boards.
I had a friend of mine say, well, why do you look at this player as being so much different than the other? And they were referring to Marvin Harrison Jr., my number three player. Number three was where I had Bijan Robinson last year. That's how good of a player he is. But number two, I have Malik Nabers, the wide receiver from LSU. When you go and take a look at just the ways he can beat defenses, they're just a little bit more varied. It's almost like he has just a few other options because of the explosive speed. I think if you want to bring up Marvin Harrison Jr., he's an outstanding football player. I would take him as a top five player, no doubt about it. It's just what, you know, you start getting a little bit of these signals of things that kind of rub you funny. When you don't run at the combine and you don't run at a pro day, I'm kind of wondering why you're not running and you're not specifying any kind of injury. If it was me and I know that I'm probably maybe a 4.6 guy, maybe a 4.65 guy, I know that I win because of my route running. But if the NFL isn't sure about my long speed, I don't want to make them sure by going out and running. And so that's the difference of the two. I think Malik Nabers can blow by defenses. Marvin Harrison just does it differently.
Now, we all got a chance to watch Brock Bowers' career from his first game until his final snap, and we know how good he is. It's a sort of an interesting perspective on the player as opposed to positional value. Where is Brock on your board?
I have him fourth overall. I believe that he is a top five player in this draft. Now, he's not going to go top five. It'd be really difficult for him to be top 10 unless somebody decides they want to take a shot at one of the stronger players on the board. I think a lot of this comes back to me. It's a playmaker. It's a touchdown maker. And in terms of what he does or what he's asked to do, he's outstanding at it. He's a two-time John Mackey Award winner. You know, that's kind of rare for the tight end position. But when you just from watching his career, the fact that we would go into a season and every year set a line, we'd do a vault and say 9.5 touchdowns, because who scores 10 touchdowns at tight end in the SEC? You know, Kyle Pitts and Brock Bowers. Those are the kind of special players that they are who do that stuff.
Carlos Medina with us as our front office Lowe's build-up to the NFL draft. As Lowe's is with us on the Hobson & Hobson newsmaker line. Now, for the let me mention on Brock, by the way. I could see Brock going 5 to the Chargers. I could see him going 9 to the Bears just as kind of a sort of an addendum to teams that could, you know, get kind of fun with a fun weapon like Brock. For the Falcons at number 8, it feels like, I mean, we say this so many years, but it feels like the pass rusher is going to be on the board staring at them, and now it's about which flavor of pass rusher you like more.
Yeah, and I have Jared Verse as my 11th overall player. I have Dallas Turner as my 12th overall player. And I've tried to liken it like this. You can go back to 2004. It's 20 years ago, so this is going to sound a little bit ancient, but you'll know the names. The best pass rusher in that draft at the time at the top was Sean Merriman, and he played over at Maryland, and he had a lot of tools in the bag. Then there was a younger guy behind him who wasn't quite as polished but had some pretty interesting tools, and that was DeMarcus Ware. And they basically went back-to-back. And so San Diego gets Merriman, Dallas gets Ware, and Dallas ends up having a player that goes on to, you know, win a Super Bowl in Denver and goes to the Hall of Fame. There was nothing wrong with Merriman. He was the best player at that position for the first couple of years of his career. He just didn't have the same longevity. I look at, if you told me I had to win a game, you know, tomorrow, Jared Verse from Florida State, I think, gives you a better opportunity than Dallas Turner. But Dallas Turner has freaky abilities. We're talking about a get-off that's as good as anyone in the league. 1.6 is the normal time for the top pass rushers in their 10-yard split. This guy's in the 1.5s. So it's explosion off the edge. It's a crazy amount of ability. But, again, both flavors are good. It's just a matter of if you want to wait for the other one to really kind of reach the top of his game.
All right, so let me ask you about the rest of the quarterbacks, because this is where we always talk about them getting overdrafted. Give me some numbers on your big board about Jaden Daniels, about Drake May, and then the most fascinating one with J.J. McCarthy.
I have Drake May as my fifth overall player. I just think that a lot of the times we get caught up in this. Everyone's caught up in movement and creating space, and that's what the league is. If you can do it with a bigger guy, you're better. That's why we talk about Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen every year, and look what these guys can do and how they threaten the defense. I think Drake May can do those sorts of things. He's a very good athlete. When you now look at my number eight player, Jaden Daniels, this a lot comes down to this. When I wrote about him and when I did the research, we're talking about a player that was playing at about 190 pounds. And LSU and he decided you got to get bigger because of your style of play. And fortunately for him, and credit to him, he put on 15 pounds to get to 205. I found it very strange that when they got to the NFL Combine and you just do the measurements, at the very worst, you get measured and obviously you go through the medicals. Jaden Daniels refused to be measured. He didn't want higher weight as part of what he was doing. That's one of those signals to me is, are you trying to get bigger? Are you trying to get stronger? Is it not working out? Because if he can get to, let's say, 220, 217, like J.J. McCarthy did, that's going to alleviate some of the questions about the pounding that he'll take in the league.
Front Office Los is with us with Chuck and Chernoff as we count our way down to the NFL draft. Now, Los, we know all the stories about the big players, right? We know some of the stories of Caleb Williams, Heisman Trophy winner, and we know the story of Drake May and the other quarterbacks. What about some of the other storylines for maybe some of the lesser-known players that have a great story with them?
So my top cornerback in this draft is Quinyon Mitchell, and he is a player who had – he was being recruited by Illinois, and Illinois is just turning out cornerbacks. And he decided, after he visited Toledo, of all places, I like this place better. I've been to Illinois, and I've decided Toledo's the place. He ends up as an All-American this past year, goes down to the Senior Bowl, and everyone recognized this is the best cornerback in this group. He has everything you're looking for in terms of size and speed. He's the 6 foot. He's the 195. He's a larger cornerback. Though, by the way, he goes out and runs 4.33. There's a lot to like about him. He's more of what you're looking for if you told me you're taking a quarterback cornerback in the top 10. Another guy that I just love the story is Tyler Guyton. He is the left tackle from Oklahoma. He went to TCU, and they decided his role is going to be, you're going to be an H-back, but we might also have you play some offensive line because you're a big kid. Well, he ends up transferring to Oklahoma. He fills out. This is now a very athletic 6'7", 320-something, you know, left tackle. I mean, this is now a really big kid. And when you see him move, you say, that's a really athletic left tackle. Now, he's still got to learn the position. But to me, if you want to say what's in the toolkit and what he could become versus what he is now, I think he's the biggest boom or bust guy because, again, he's a former H-back. He's a former skill player moving to left tackle.
Is there a position? Now, we always talk about runs in the draft. Is there a position that you see the run? Like, everybody thinks wide receiver, right? Or maybe it's the edge. Like, do you see the runs early in this draft forcing some teams to maybe jump earlier than they want to?
I think tackle ends up being in it. You know, we talk about going back to 2008, and Sam Baker was probably a late one, maybe an early two from Southern Cal, and the run started, and at that point the Falcons had to trade up to go get Sam Baker. There's a guy that I have as my 33rd overall pick is Jordan Morgan, left tackle from Arizona. He should probably be a late first, early second. That run's going to start, and while you have a lot of guys that are designated as tackles in this draft, there's a lot of right tackles. There's a lot of guys, like, for instance, I have J.C. Latham, the right tackle from Alabama, as 15th overall. I believe he's a right tackle only. You've got a lot of guys that are like that. There's only, in my opinion, 3 to 4 left tackles at the top of this draft. So once Joe Alt is off the board, you're now having to look around and say, all right, do I want the Penn State left tackle? Do I want the Arizona left tackle? Even one of the left tackles you'll see in this draft is Graham Barton from Duke. He's not even playing left tackle, Matt. They kicked him from three-year starter at Duke to playing center. So even like one of the stronger left tackles in this draft is actually a center in this draft.
Amazing. It's going to be fun to watch. We're a little less than right at a month till the NFL draft. Los's big board will be available. The draft guide, which is always a huge resource for us and you guys, will give you details on how you can get your hands on it coming up in the days ahead. Los, as always, we appreciate the insight.
See you, Matt.
All right, coming up, Falcon fans may get a real inspiration from a most unlikely NFL source. The King will explain next.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory-certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to wadeford.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory-certified used car outlet at wadeford.com. Wade Ford. We are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download The Fan app.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
When you buy a used car, don't be taken for a ride. Get Ford Blue Advantage certified at Wade Ford, Atlanta's headquarters for factory-certified pre-owned vehicles. Go to wadeford.com. There you'll find a great selection of Ford Blue Advantage certified used cars, trucks, and SUVs. With Blue certified, nearly all makes and all models are in stock now. You'll find something perfect for just about any budget. Buy with confidence at the Wade Ford factory-certified used car outlet at wadeford.com. Wade Ford. We are Atlanta's Ford dealer.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.